Good afternoon, everybody. I'm a little bit confused because when I used to give the show regularly, I'm sure I used to sit over there. So I see there have been lots of changes then. So I understand Rabbi Silverman is not available today, so they asked me to do both ends of the session. So it's good to be back in Kinloss and giving the shiurim today. So I want us to look at Parashat Bo. I thought we would look at various themes through the Sedra, but it's always good to start at the very beginning and just look at the opening Pasuk, and then we'll go on to some of the bigger themes as we go through the Sedra. Vayomer Adonai Moshe Bo El Paro. So Hashem said to Moshe, come to Paro. Because I have hardened or heavy, made his heart heavy, and the heart of a resistant, I think is perhaps a better translation, and the heart of his servants, so that I can put these signs of mine amongst them. I used to do a chocolate bar question on a Friday night in shul. And for Parashat Bo, I always used to like to ask, why do girls not like this week's Parasha? The answer is because it's called boy. But depending on where they got their Jewish education from, they didn't necessarily understand the joke. So Moshe Rabbeinu is told, Bo El Paro, Rashi says, Vayomer Hashem Moshe Bo El Paro, because actual fact, if we look in the Psukim, it doesn't clearly say what the purpose of this was, and Rashi says v'hatrebo, and you need to warn Paro. You need to warn Paro about what's likely to happen to him if he continues to resist. But Rav Yosef Bechor Shor, who back in the old days when we had the shir regularly, we saw Rav Yosef Bechor Shor on a number of occasions. He was a Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam was the grandson of Rashi, and Rav Yosef Bechor Shor was a Talmud of Rashi's grandson. He picks up on a different part of the Pasuk. Boel Paro, Lo Haya Lo Omer Leich Kim Bo. Now, we would usually expect that this is Hashem giving a command to Moshe to go somewhere. So therefore, we would expect it to say, Leich el Paro, go to Paro. But instead, it's actually saying, Bo el Paro, come to Paro. Why is it come to Paro? What does Rav Yosef Bechor Shor say? That's, Shemashma she'ani eileich imach. That I will go with you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is promising Moshe, I will accompany you on this task. And it occurred to me that perhaps this is, you know, a model for our experiences throughout life, that in actual fact, when we have a difficult, we feel we're on a difficult mission, we have a difficult task that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has set us as part of our religious faith, it's not a matter of leich that we have to go alone, but it's bo that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coming with us. Okay, so we have the last three plagues that's in this week's parasha, and the penultimate one is Makat Choshech, the plague of darkness. What does the Pasuk tell us? The Pasuk tells us, Vayet Moshe Yado al Hashamayim, so Moshe stretched out his hand over the heavens, Vayehi Choshech Afeila B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, and there was thick darkness throughout the land of Mitzrayim, Shaloshet Yamim, for 3 days. And of course, we all know that the place of darkness actually lasted for 6 days, and we'll deal with that in due course. Let's look at Rashi. So Rashi says, Vayichoshech hafeila shloshet yamim. There was this thick darkness for 3 days. Choshech shel ofel. Okay, choshech hafeila means it was a choshech, a darkness. Ofel is like a mist or a fog. Shelo ra'u eshet achiv otan shloshet yamim. Nobody could see each other at all for the 3 days. Vo'od shloshet yamim acherim choshech muchpal al zeh. And then there was a further 3 days of even more intense darkness. Shelo kamu ish mitachtav, when not only could people not see anything, but they couldn't even get up. Yoshev en yachol la'amod, a person who was sitting down was unable to get up. Va'omeid en yachol le'shev, and a person who was sitting, or was standing, wasn't able to sit. So we'll discuss that a little bit more in a few moments' time. But, you know, we're not really used to total darkness. There's a lot of light pollution where we, where we are. So, you know, it's dark outside, but it's not really that dark. I mean, it's quite dark, but you can sort of, you know, still see something. There's always sort of traffic lights. You need to go into the middle of nowhere, you know, to get an experience of what absolute darkness is like. One time we had a holiday cottage on the Scottish borders. That's where, you know, not only there were no neighbours or no phone signal, that's, you know, but there were no light, you know, and you went outside to, you know, take out the bins at night, and it really was pitch black. I once experienced it, you know, on the train. I was on the underground, and the train stopped in a tunnel, and all the lights went out. It was before mobile phones, so people didn't have, you know, now there'd be lots of lights still in the carriage because everybody's on their mobile phone anyhow. And that was, you know, total darkness, and it was actually quite debilitating. Like, you know, a few moments later the lights came on, but for those few moments you really did feel like, you know, you couldn't move because there was no sense of anything, you know, being around you. And that is perhaps what the darkness was, what was like on that occasion. Now Rashi asked an interesting question. So why was there this plague of darkness? The answer is, that point in time, there were certain wicked people amongst the Israelites, who didn't want to leave Egypt. They thought it was nice here in Egypt, or at least it was better.
Remainers,
exactly. And they died during the 3 days of darkness. So that the Egyptians shouldn't see what was happening to those Israelites. It was a source of embarrassment, a source of shame to Am Yisrael that these people had to be killed off during this period of time. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it under the cover of darkness. And the Egyptians just assumed that, you know, the Israelites were suffering in the same way that they were. So that's answer number one in Rashi. The Israelites also had the opportunity during these 3 days of darkness to go around the Egyptians' homes and see what was there. And when they left Egypt and they had the requirement, Hashem said that they had to ask the Egyptians for klei chesef, for klei zahav, for the gold and silver. And the Egyptians said, oh no, we don't have anything. Then they would say, Ani ra'itiv beveitcha, I saw it in your house. I know that you've got a silver jug. So I'm over makom ploni, who is in such and such a place. It's on top of the television. That's in those days, televisions were big, so you could put things on top of the television. Now you can't put things on top of the television. It's on top of the television in the in the lounge or whatever it was. Now this is Barry.
How come they could see when they went round to the Egyptians' houses?
So this was something that didn't affect the Israelites. The Israelites had light where they were living. That's presumably this Rashi understands that it affected the Egyptians rather than the Israelites. Some Mepharshim suggest it was a sort of cataract that affected the. So it wasn't the atmosphere, but it was the people. The people were affected rather than the. Rather than the blotting out of the light, but it was every individual that was afflicted with that, you know, something. They could have just lit a candle.
Yeah, that wasn't really that thick.
Okay, so hold that on as we come over to the next. It's a very good question. You know, Rashi is bringing in Midrash Chazal. So you're right, according to the straightforward reading of the Psukim, this would be challenging. Yeah. The Kli Yakar asks a different question against Rashi, though. That's Kli Yakar's question is, why is Rashi asking a question? Meaning, Rashi asked a question here. Rashi asked, V'lama hevi alehem achoshech? Why did this makkah happen? Now, Rashi doesn't ask that question about any of the other makot. With the plague of blood or frogs or lice in last week's parasha, Rashi never said, oh, by the way, why was there this plague? It's only with the plague of darkness that Rashi wants to know, why was there particularly this plague? So that's the question that the Kli Yakar is going to address. So Rashi asks the question, why was there the plague of darkness? That's not a question that Rashi asks in any other of the makot. Because with all the other plagues, Ilu haya paro rotze lashuv b'tshuva b'od hamakam shameshet haya yachol. With all the other plagues, Paro had the opportunity, had the free will, and we know that it was a limited free will because vaniach bezet lev paro, that vaniach shet lev paro, I will harden Paro's heart. That, but he had the free will to at any point in time say, you know what, I'm changing my mind, they can go. That's avalkan lo kamu ish mitachtav kol gimul yamim. But with the plagues of darkness, that possibility was denied him because he couldn't move for 3 days. Even if he wanted to go and get Moshe and Aaron to come, that was impossible. He wasn't able to move. So Rashi's real question is, why, not why was there a plague of darkness, but why was the plague of darkness such that it denied Paro the opportunity to do anything about it? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create a plague that Paro couldn't do anything about? Or even though Hashem had already hardened his heart, that was because Paro had already started hardening his own heart. Therefore, that Hashem made Paro's heart even harder. But with the plague of darkness, even if he'd wanted to change his mind, he couldn't. Why did Hashem deny Paro the opportunity to do teshuvah? Because of those wicked Israelites who didn't want to leave Mitzrayim. Okay, that's why it had to work in that way. So Rashi's question is not so much why darkness instead of not, you know, blood or frogs or whatever it was, but why was there such a plague that Paro became disabled from doing anything? And the answer was because the Israelites had to either die, those who weren't leaving Mitzrayim, or had to have free rein to go where they wanted. And that's why that was necessary to have a makah of this nature.
Weren't the plagues in three groups? And in each case, there was one that came without warning anyway, wasn't there?
Yes.
So it wasn't in those cases also, it wasn't as though, Moshe to Paro, this plague would come.
No, but with any of those plagues, Paro could have still at any point in time, called to Moshe and say, listen, enough of this, let's bring it to an end. Whereas that was denied him, that's in the case of Choshech. There is a super commentary on Rashi called the Be'er Basadeh. This was written by a Serbian rabbi in the mid-19th century. And he asks the same question on Rashi, like, why does Rashi have to tell us about this makah? He gives a different answer. That's, it's a little bit unclear, the text, but if I read, you might be able to follow. V'lama hevi alehem choshech. So Rashi asks, why was there the plague of darkness? Shal Rabbeinu ma tam yesh lozot hamakah. Rashi asks, what was the purpose of this plague? Mashein kein b'shar makot. That wasn't a question that he asked with any of the other makot. Now, why the Be'er Basadeh is saying, why did Rashi ask this? Mishum de kaimelan da achar she'vialav hamakot hakdomot shayu kashot v'chamurot mehachoshech. The point is, the plague of darkness wasn't particularly vicious. If you look at the progression of the plagues, you kind of expect them to get worse and worse as time goes on. But when it came to the plague of darkness was You know, at the end of the day, it was sort of an inconvenience for 3 days. I mean, I suppose if you needed the bathroom, you know, then it was more than an inconvenience. But essentially, you know, it wasn't wrecking the entire country. You know, they just had the plague of locusts, right, which had left, you know, every bit of vegetation in the entire country, you know, denuded. That, you know, there'd been hail which had, you know, that's, you know, destroyed anything that was out there. There'd been the death of the animals. Now we've got darkness, so people had to sit still for 3 days. It might have been frightening, but it wasn't terribly destructive. So the Be'er Basaleh is saying that Rashi's question is, why was the penultimate plague so tame? The choshech was relatively innocuous. That's adraba hayalo lahavi alehem makacheret chamurav kashame hakodmot. It should have been a more vicious plague. Mashani, and the answer that Rashi gives is in hachinami. That's true. To makazot lo lahanishet hamitzriim bilvad haita. This plague wasn't only to punish the Egyptians, but it was also to give the Israelites an opportunity or to kill off the various Israelites. So both of them are asking the same question and answering it in different ways. They both wanted to know, why does Rashi unusually have to explain why there was this plague? And the Kliyakar's point was because that's it's strange that Paro was denied the opportunity to do teshuva, and the Be'er Basadeh's point is that it was strange that this was such an innocuous plague. Now, let's try and understand a little bit more about the nature of this darkness. So I want us to look at the comments of Reb Yaakov C. Mecklenburg, one of the German 19th century commentators, who is always very keen to try and reconcile rabbinic tradition with what actually appears in the Pasuk. And the Pasuk tells us this was Choshech Afela. This was a very overwhelming darkness, so that people couldn't get up or sit down. Rabbi Mitzmau Haloim Miderach Choshech Lesoret Adab Basar. That darkness isn't really usually so debilitating that a person is locked in Ad Shelo Yuchal Lakum Imkom Mashafo, to the degree that he's unable to stand up. Even a person who's blind, you know, will be able to, you know, move around, you know, and walk around somewhat. Now, some Mefarshim suggest, this is the Ralbag, Gersonides, he suggests in actual fact the whole atmosphere became very, very thick. It was like some sort of volcanic sulfur or something like that invaded the atmosphere and just made people unable to move. Imkain, but he says that's preposterous. Imkain, eich shafu ruach. How could people have breathed? Halok rege yamutu me'afisat ruach hanashima. If the air, the atmosphere became so thick that people couldn't move, then they wouldn't be able to breathe either. We reject what the Ralbag says, he says. The Ralbag suggests they had to plug up their nostrils and their mouths so that this atmospheric change wouldn't enter their bodies. Well, if you're plugging up your nose and your mouth for 3 days, then it's going to be challenging. How can you live if you've closed up your nose and your mouth for 3 days? Lachain Amar Ranu. Ranu, the Ketav Kabbalah refers to Rav Naftali Wiesel, who was also a German Bible scholar. Be'emet HaTorah Satma Dvareha. So it says the Torah is left out some details. Aval b'Kabbalah HaDavar Mufurash. Because in actual fact, elsewhere, we've got more clarity. Now, the ten makot are mentioned twice in Tanakh. Once in Sefer Shemot, and where else? Tehillim. In Tehillim, Perek Ayin Chet. So some people follow the Minhag of the Vilna Gaon, and each day of Pesach say a different Shir Shel Yom. That's a different perek as the Shir Shel Yom. And one of the days of Pesach, they say Tehillim Ayin Chet, which is recounts the Esem Makot. Ki HaMashorer Amar, and Rabbi Yaakov from Mecklenburg is referring us to Tehillim Ayin Chet, Yishalach Bam Charon Apo, Evra Vazam Tzara Mishlachat Malachei Ra'im. Now we know that pasuk, of course, we say it at the Seder. That's that HaKadosh Baruch Hu that cast against the Egyptians, Charon Apo, the wrath of his anger, Evra Vazam, fury and wrath, Vatsara Mishlachat Malachi Ra'im, and troubles and groups of Malachi Ra'im, of destructive angels. Inyan Mishlachat Malachi Ra'im She'amar HaMashorer. Now, what were these Malachi Ra'im? That's which David HaMelech refers to. Hubatz Moshe Amar B'Sefer Chochmat Shlomo. This is very interesting from a number of perspectives, this passage. He's quoted so far another German Bible scholar, Rav Naftali Wiesel. He's quoted Tehillim. He's now quoting that Sefer Chochmat Shlomo, the wisdom of Solomon. Okay, that is one of the apocryphal books. So very interesting that he's bringing one of the apocryphal books as a source here. Vayashumu vayibalu ma'od, where it says, and this is obviously a translation from the original Greek, that vayashumu vayibalu ma'od, describing what happened in Egypt, they were terrified. Vayecherdu, and they were frightened. Mitmunot zarot kolot shonot, from all sorts of strange images and sounds. Hamu savivotehem, which caused a noise around them. Lahafchidam, to frighten them. Umalachei ra'im zo'afei panim niru lamo, and frightening looking angels appeared to them. Hinei necherdu mechezionot zarot shera'u, v'hei marot mishunot sheniru lamo lahavitam. So what he's saying is that together with the darkness, there was the darkness, but there was also sort of, it was almost like a chamber of horrors or something like this. You know, you think about going to one of these theme parks or something like that. You know, that actually this would be an interesting thing to have. Worse than a ghost train. That's you know, this would be interesting. You know, the 10 plagues of Egypt ride. That's, you know, could be, you know, but you'd, and then towards the end, you get the plague of darkness, where it's not only as the thing goes through, you know, careers through the darkness, then in pitch black, you know, almost every, you know, few seconds, you know, a frightening, you know, image jumps out at you and roars or something like that. And that was what accompanied the darkness. It says that's not mufurash in the text, but that's what David HaMelech refers to in Tehillim, and which is described in the Apocrypha. And that's what frightened them so much that they were unable even to move. So it's become a very, rather than just sort of sitting there in pitch black, it's become a very graphic that and terrifying experience, that plague of darkness. Let's move on to something less frightening. Vayitein Adonai etchein ha'am b'enei Mitzrayim. So Hashem gave the people favor in the eyes of Mitzrayim. Gam ha'ish Moshe gadol ma'od be'eretz Mitzrayim. Moshe was also very important in the land of Mitzrayim. Paro didn't think much of him, but be'enei avdei Faro ve'enei ha'am, in the eyes of Paro's servants and the eyes of the people. Question is, why was Moshe regarded with such, it seems, admiration? This is prior to the 10th plague. Why did the people admire Moshe Rabbeinu? There's a very fascinating comment here from the Netziv. The Netziv says as follows. Gavash Moshe, afal gavsha salahem ra'arabah. Remember that Moshe had basically destroyed the entire country. That's, you know, it was through Moshe that they just suffered 9 devastating plagues. And everybody admires him. They think, you know, not that, you know, they were frightened of him, but he was Gadol Ma'od. He was very important. He was highly regarded. Gadol Ma'od Bein Avdei Faro. Shehema Kvar Hiskimu Sheyitzu Yisrael. They actually, for a while, had thought it's time to let Bnei Israel go. They were ready to give up. Uparo makshili bo b'chinam, and they just felt that Paro was being obstinate. Umikol makom, nevertheless, Ra'u, they saw, ki Moshe mizdareiz lahatir, v'chas alehem mo'oz. They saw that Moshe Rabbeinu, every time he davened for the plagues to come to an end, he was davening genuinely for them, and that he genuinely cared about them. And this was something very special that they observed in Moshe Rabbeinu. It's true, yes, that he was bringing the country to its knees, but at the same time, Moshe cared about the people. And if he, you know, as soon as Paro gave the opportunity for the plague to come to an end, Moshe went out there right away and davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it should come to an end, because he was bothered by the suffering of the people. And he goes on to say, we won't look at it inside, but he goes on to say, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu learnt from the example of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu's role was Vayita Avhamon Goyim, that he should be the father of many nations, that he shouldn't just be parochial in his concerns, that he should have concerns for others as well. And that was being replicated by Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is why the people regarded Moshe very highly. Okay, so the final plague was the plague of Makat B'chorot. So Moshe said to Paro, this is what God says, at midnight I will go out into Mitzrayim. Rashi, of course, picks up on the fact that Kachatzot, Rashi thinks, means sort of at midnight-ish. That's, and why was he saying at midnight-ish? Every Egyptian will die. From the greatest to the least important. And there will be a great shout throughout the land of Mitzrayim. Never happened before, never to be replicated in the future. Ulachol b'nei Yisrael, lo yecharatz kelev l'shono l'meisho ad behema, but no dog shall wet its tongue against b'nei Yisrael, against man or beast, l'man teidun, so that you should know, ashe yafle adonai ben Mitzrayim vein Yisrael, that Hashem is making a difference between the Egyptians and b'nei Yisrael. That's close followers of the text will know, of course, this comes up twice, some of these verses. Once with the prediction of what would happen, and once with the execution of what happened. There's a subtle difference. Here it says, Mibcho Paro Hayoshev Al Kiso, from the firstborn of Paro who sits on his throne, Ad Bechor Ashivcha, until the firstborn of the maidservant. Later on, when the plague is executed, anybody recall what it says? Ad b'chor hashvi, right, until the firstborn of the captive. It doesn't say the firstborn of the shivcha, of the maidservant. It says until the firstborn of the captive. So why have we got a difference? Why in one case does it, you know, they're both very lowly. That's why in one case does it say the firstborn of the maidservant, and the other, the firstborn of the captive. So the Malbim answers it and makes the observation that the Shivcha wasn't just, a home help who comes in to wash the dishes, that's, and do a bit of ironing. The Shivcha was a servant. It was an Egyptian servant as opposed to an Israeli servant, but it was a servant, a lowly person. What happened to the servants? During the day, they worked. Moshe Rabbeinu communicated to Paro during the day, so therefore he spoke about the Bechor HaShivcha. Where did the servants go at night time? At night time, the servants didn't go back home to a house in Hampstead Garden suburb. At night time, they were put into prison. They were thrown into the cupboard under the stairs or whatever it was. So at night time, when the plague took place, it was Bechor Hashvi. They were captives. At daytime, when the plague was predicted, they were Shvachot. They were maidservants. But at night time, they were captives. So that's the first observation that the Malbim makes. Second is, he wonders what this Tzaka Gedola was. So this great cry that went out through Mitzrayim. What was that great cry? And, you know, we talk about it every year on Seder night. In our minds, what do we imagine is that great cry? Who's crying out?
Mothers, the families of the dead.
The parents, the families of the dead. And what are they crying out about?
They're lost.
They're lost. I always understood that it was crying out in pain. I think somehow in the back of my mind, I had in mind that it was the...
I think it was terror that they'd be next.
Okay, could be terror that they'd be next. I have to say, in my mind, I've got no basis for this, but my mind, I was sort of thought it must be a film or something I saw as a kid or something, that it was the firstborn screaming as the Malach HaMavet came to them and, you know, they cried out, you know, just as they were dying. The Malbim makes another observation, though. I mean, everything that everybody said, you know, could well be right. The Malbim understood it differently. He tzakat mered. It was a cry of rebellion. K'mosh amru chazal sheratzu laharoget paro. They wanted to kill paro. Uvieh shelo haya hamered neged Yisrael. They weren't rebelling against the Israelites. Ki behefech. That's on the contrary. Sheafat klavim shenovchim bashmura shniya. Uvat shemalach hamavet ba'ir. That's uvat shemalach hamavet ba'ir. Even the dogs that usually, you know, would be barking. They didn't bark against the Israelites. This was a cry of revolt. This was all the Egyptians, you know, chanting, you know, down with Paro, death to Paro, down with Paro. That was the cry. We seem to think that it's a tzaka, a cry of anguish, but it was a cry of rebellion. That's what the Malbim says was happening. That's I think we understand that Paro was saved. The pasuk says mibachor Paro. Paro was a bechor. But the plague was only against mibachor Paro, not including Paro. It's unlikely in Egyptian society. You know, we talk about why were the firstborn, you know, why were the firstborn killed? Because the firstborn in Egyptian society, you know, occupied an elevated position. So it's unlikely that Paro wasn't a firstborn. Presumably, Paro had to see what happened, and Paro had to let the people go. You know, it's, you know, often that's, you know, we say, you know, with a dictator, you know, you know, there's always the question, you know, should they be killed, executed, or should they have to, you know, or is that too good for them? That's, would it have been better if Bin Laden had been captured and had to stand trial, or that he got away easy, you know, he was killed? It would have been too easy for Paro just to be killed. He had to turn around and say, I'm letting them go.
Hasn't this revolt already taken place of the first one, the Machinit Zayed of Chareim? The plague of
that was the Bechorim coming and
Bechorim coming, the first one.
Yeah, now it's everybody else. The Bechorim are dead.
That's what I said before, that they were.
Yeah, that was a minor revolt. This is a major revolt. That's the previously nothing, you know, there was no no good results from it.
But it was a civil war.
Yes. But also, you know, that's a drash on the pasuk, whereas I think the Malbim is presenting this as this as pshat. We've got a few more minutes. Let's look at some further important themes. First mitzvah to Bnei Yisrael. Vayomer Adonai Moshe Be'el Aaron Be'eretz Mitzrayim Le'emor. So Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron in the land of Mitzrayim, thusly, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim, this month will be the first of months for you. Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodshei Hashanah, it's the first month of the months of the year. It's interesting, perhaps more than interesting, fascinating, that the first mitzvah given to Am Yisrael is a mitzvah to do with the calendar. You know, there have been a couple of mitzvot in Sefer Bereshit, but they were given to the Avot. Now, for the first time, we've got, you know, the people being given a mitzvah. You would have thought it would be something, you know, highly significant. You know, Shema Yisrael, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Can't say Hashem Hotzei Ticha Me'eretz Yisrael, because they haven't been taken out of Egypt yet. But, you know, something to do with belief, or maybe something to do with chesed. That's, you know, something very significant. You know, rather it's sort of, you know, just make sure that the date on your calendar, that your Google calendar is set to a Hebrew calendar rather than to the civil year. That's, you know, it's strange that this is the first commandment given to the Jewish people. Clearly, the question is, why is it so important? In terms of, Yeah, I understand that this is, it shows it's very important, but why is it so important? Or it might not necessarily be so important, it might just be significant in this context. So let's look at the Sforno for starters. The Sforno says as follows, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim, Mikan Ve'elach Yu HaChodashim Shelachem. From this point onwards, the months will be defined by you. Lasot pahem kirtzonchem, that and you will use the months as you see fit. Avalbimeha shibud, but whilst you were slaves, lo hayu mechem shelachem, your time wasn't your own. Aval hayu laavodat achirim rutzonam, your time was actually, you were at the will and the beck and call of others. Lefichach rishon hulachem lechodshei hashana. Therefore, you've got the mitzvah of Rishon Hulachem Lechodshei Hashana. Kivohit chil mitziutchem habachiri. This is now, for the first time, you've got the choice of how to use your time. So it's not necessarily saying that this is supremely important. There might be other more important mitzvot. But this was a mitzvah, this was really introducing them to the concept of freedom. When you're a prisoner, that's time's not your own. That's and time is irrelevant. If you're on in prison on a 30-year life sentence, remand officer wants you, can I see you next Tuesday? I don't think I'll be doing anything else. You know, it's like time is an irrelevancy. It's one day merges into the next, and you know, it's all the same. You can't choose how to use your time. Whereas, as a free person, that's the biggest gift that you've got. You've got the gift of time. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying to Bnei Israel when he gave them that first mitzvah of HaKodesh HaZeh Lachem. And Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Hirsch both developed this theme a little bit. But Rav Soloveitchik has a long piece on this notion of time, freedom of time, being a characteristic of the free person. He makes a fascinating observation. So, Dvar Torah I like to give at the Seder table to start off Seder night with. What's the first mitzvah of Seder night out of the 15 steps? Kaddish. We make Kiddush. That's the first thing that we do. So we usually think that, Kaddish, it's a Yom Tov meal. It's, Kaddish, Urchatz, and then we'll get on to the Maggid. But Rav Soloveitchik says, in actual fact, Kaddish is an opening statement about what Seder night is about. In what sense? What's the key bracha of Kiddush on Seder night? Mekadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim. Okay, we talk about sanctifying the Jewish people and time. That is how we are sanctified, by how we use our time. And that's the first mitzvah that ties in with the first mitzvah that Bnei Yisrael were given. Two other ideas came to mind, which I want to share with you, though. That's about why this was an appropriate first mitzvah to give to the Jewish people. What was happening to the Jewish people when they were freed from Mitzrayim? What sort of metamorphosis did they undergo? So they underwent a metamorphosis. Now, for the first time, they were becoming a people. They went down to Mitzrayim as a family, as a large family. In Mitzrayim, they multiplied, and there were lots of them, but they didn't really have any national identity. They were slaves. And now they were being freed as a people. Now, to be a people, that you can have sort of an ethnic identity, but really, to be effective as a people, you need to have something more than just, either shared genes or a love for Kugel or something like that. That you need to have, ideally, a nation will have a homeland of its own. Well, they were going into a wilderness for 40 years. That it was going to be a while till they had a homeland. However, if they have their own calendrical system, then that gives them a national identity. In terms of that, we are not counting time the way that you're counting time. We've got something which identifies us as a nation, and particularly we're going to be counting from Yetziat to Mitzrayim, that defines us as a nation. And that might be another reason why this was the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people. And then a third answer I want to suggest is, what is the key motif of Rosh Chodesh. Because, you know, HaKodesh HaZerachem links in with Rosh Chodesh. What would you say, in one word, is the key motif of Rosh Chodesh?
Rebirth.
Rebirth or renewal, exactly. And this, I think, is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to say to Bnei Yisrael. In terms of, there's always an opportunity for a new beginning. Bnei Yisrael had been enslaved in Mitzrayim for a long period of time. They'd felt they were, you know, continually going further and further down into an abyss. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling them was HaKodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim, that after it declined, there's still the possibility for ascent once again. That you've waned, but you can wax again. And that was the reason why this was the first mitzvah given to Bnei Israel, because it was a mitzvah of hope and opportunity and encouragement for the future. Okay, there's a very, very important Ramban. We haven't got time to do more than the first couple of lines of it. We'll look at the first couple of lines, and then I'll say outside the rest of it. Why is it important the Jewish people should have their own calendar? Or their own way of counting the months. That the Jewish people should count Nisan as the first month. And from that count the subsequent months, second month, third month, ad tashnu ashana b'shneim asa, chodesh, till you have 12 months of the year. Kedei sheyeh zeh zichron b'neis hagadol. So there's a reminder of the enormous miracle. Ki b'chol eit shen azkir ha-chodashim, yeh ha-neis nizkar. So that whenever you mention the months, then you remember Yitziat Mitzrayim. Or we talk about Jewish names, you know, the Hebrew names of the month. They're not Hebrew names, they came from Bavel. That's in the Torah, there's no names for the months. It says, you know, the third month, the seventh month, etc., etc. Just like the days of the week, we count according to Shabbat, we remind ourselves of Maaseh Bereshit, of the creation of the world. So with the months of the year, we remind ourselves of Yitziat Mitzrayim, of the Exodus. And therefore, whenever we talk about an event, whenever we put anything into context, it was on Wednesday, the third of the sixth month. Okay, reminds us both of Maaseh Bereshit and Yitziat Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role in creating the world, and his Hashkacha Pratit for the Jewish people. To finish off with an observation made first by the Maharam Shik, and then discussed by later Achronim, the Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Avadya Yosef, the Maharam Shik and the Tzitz Eliezer suggest that when you write a check, and you put the date on the check, you know, today's what, the 28th? 28th is today? 29th of January, Rav Oldenburg says, you mustn't write 29-1-20. Because if you write 29-1-20, you're missing out on this mitzvah, Chodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim. Nisan is the first month, and not any other month. If you write 1 for January, then you're ignoring this mitzvah taseh. When you write a check, you should always write 29th of January. Well, don't always write the 29th of January, because sometimes the check will bounce if you do that. But you write the date, write the word, the name out in full. Because otherwise, if you call January the first month, then you're missing out on this mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. I'd like to say I look forward to meeting you again in the future, giving another shiur. I think the next shiur is after lunch. That's Adka. That's...
Yehuda, you want something?